Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. This will be our last live show before Christmas, so we thought we'd open up the phone lines and have an open forum, kind of a year-end open forum, look back on all the stories, all the events of 2010. It's been quite a year. Of course, we elected a new governor in 2010, and we elected a lot of new representatives to Congress, and it was a sweep election for the Republicans, so we can look back on that and some of the reasons why that happened. We'd like to know what your biggest story of the year was. What do you think will have the longest lasting impact on the state of Ohio and in the country over the next 12 months or even longer? 292-8513 is our phone number, 292-8513. The agenda is up to you to set, more or less. 292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu. Also, check us out on Facebook, and you can get to that via our website, wosu.org. Big news down at first down in Washington. I mean, this is a lame duck session of Congress. It's not too lame. There's a lot of activity happening on Capitol Hill. Just today, President Obama signed into law the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, after really 15 years of debate over this issue. It has been put aside that now gays can openly serve in the military. Once the transition happens and the process is put in place, gays can openly serve in the military. No more don't ask, no, and no don't tell. No more discharges for a person's sexual orientation. That has been wiped away. And George Voinovich, you know, perhaps a surprise, perhaps not a surprise, voted with the majority to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell in one of his last votes as a member of the U.S. Senate as he prepares to retire in the next couple of weeks. So that was signed into law today. Have an opinion on it? Give us a call. Also, the START Treaty, it looks like that is going to be ratified. The Senate yesterday voted to move it along. They broke the filibuster, and now it looks like they have at least the two-thirds majority required to ratify the treaty, which would reduce by one-third the number of nuclear missiles that the United States and Russia possess. It also sets up some ways to monitor each other and to prevent other nations, according to the treaty, to try to prevent other nations from gaining access to nuclear material. Kind of a surprise that actually is being ratified by the Senate after a lot of inactivity in Congress over the past year. Of course, the so-called Bush tax cuts, which have been apparently renamed to the Obama tax cuts. The Bush tax cuts were extended by 2 years, meaning that come the first of the year, our taxes are not going up, which is good news, I guess, except that a lot of people feel that some or all of the tax cuts should not be approved because we don't have any way to pay for them. They're going to just increase the deficit by trillions of dollars over the next 2 years. And, of course, if they just push the fight off until 2012, which is right smack in the middle of a presidential election year. And just a guess here, my bet is that taxes will not be raised during an election year for the presidency. So 2012, we'll have this debate all over again about the extension of the Bush tax cuts, or maybe there'll be the extension of the Obama tax cuts. The president said that he had a compromise. He allowed the tax cuts to be extended even for the wealthiest Americans in return for the extension of unemployment benefits to those folks who have been out of work for such a long time during this deep recession. So if you'd like to talk about the tax cuts, 292-8513. Closer to home here at the State House, John Kasich, the governor-elect, is getting ready to take office. He has announced plans for his inauguration, his swearing-in ceremony. The tickets, I think, are available. They will be available soon. And if you want to go, you have to act early because they're expected to go quickly. He has been naming his appointments. A lot of guys, I think it's fair to say, mostly men so far, have been appointed to his cabinet. He did name Deborah Ashenhurst as the first woman to lead the Ohio National Guard. Other than that, it's all been males and it's all been white males. Tom Charles, the former outgoing inspector general now, I guess you could say, has been named head of public safety, and that's probably the one that has raised the most eyebrows, that he goes from the inspector general, who has been tough, was very tough on Governor Strickland's administration, in particular the Department of Public Safety over the past year. But he was also tough, if you recall, on former Governor Bob Taft. It was his investigations that led to the misdemeanor, I forget if it was conflict of interest or improper gifts or something like that, that Governor Taft pled guilty to or no contest to back before he left office. It was that scandal, the Tom Noe scandal, that led to the Democrats' victories in 2006. And if my memory is correct, he was also kind of tough on George Voinovich and in investigating his administration. So the investigator of governors is now part of the governor's administration. So that was the big news last week. John Bourne was named superintendent of the Highway Patrol, and that was roundly applauded and applauded loudly. Most everyone we've talked to and other reporters have talked to say he is the perfect choice for that job. And you could not find anyone to say anything bad about John Bourne as far as being the head of the Highway Patrol. So he's making his appointments, taking some criticism. He's got a few more appointments to go, so it may be a little bit premature. Taking some criticism that it's not very diverse. It's a lot of men, a lot of white men, you know, even older white men. But in the governor-elect's defense, there are many more appointments to come, and he says that we should wait until he has appointed all of his members of his administration before saying that he is not promoting diversity in state government. Other events at the on the state and local level. Last week, Mayor Coleman, in a press conference on Friday, unveiled the new speed camera SUVs. These are cameras which detect speed. Of course, we have the red light cameras, which watch intersections and take a picture of your license plate if you run a red light. But these are to detect speeders, and they'll be placed in school zones, other places where kids are congregating. So it's to try to slow cars down. As the mayor said, slow down. It's to slow cars and trucks down as they go through school zones. But you wonder if that's where it'll stop, if these cameras will be put in other places, in residential neighborhoods or in wide streets and in commercially very busy commercial areas to try to catch speeders. It's the concern is Big Brother. You have red light cameras, now you have the speed cameras, and in Newark, the mayor lost his job because of speed cameras. So they're moving very slowly with the speed cameras in the city of Columbus, keeping them just a couple locations and just where kids are. So that's, you know, easy to understand. You want cars to slow down where kids are. But, you know, my question is, when you go through a school zone, the speed limit is 20 miles an hour, and it's hard to do 20 miles an hour. It's, you really have to slow down. And I think if you're doing 25, the police officer who was there with the radar gun is probably going to let you slide because he knows that you have slowed down enough to keep kids safe and you've really made an effort to slow down. My question is, will the cameras let you slide at 22 miles an hour or at 23 miles an hour? Will you get a ticket? Police officers will review the tapes and take all the information under advisement, but you know, I don't think that was really adequately addressed in the things that I read and saw is what happens if you're only 1 or 2 miles over that 20-mile-an-hour limit. And it would be interesting to see what happens there. Of course, the criticism is that this is just a revenue grab. The company that owns the cameras gets a cut. The city gets a cut. They've made $2 million from the red light cameras so far. They're going to double that number and get even a better cut. So the criticism is this is just a way to make money for the city. But the city officials contend that the number of accidents at intersections has dropped pretty significantly, and who can argue with keeping kids safe in school zones? 292-8513, 292-8513. Open forum this hour. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann Fisher. Let's go to the phones. And, John, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, thank you, Mike, for taking my call. One of the things that you struck my nerve with is when you were talking about the inspector general being appointed to chief of safety for the state and the new director of the patrol. That's fine with me. But one of the things that struck me was at the parent news conference when Governor-elect Kasich was introducing these people, he seemed to have a little temper tantrum because some people questioned the potential conflict of interest. Now, I'm not certain about what that involves.
John, we actually have that soundbite, and let's listen to it right now.
Oh, sure.
I find myself tripping over the anthills on the way to the pyramids. We have so many stupid rules and regulations that prevent us from getting the best people to come in here. You just can't believe it. And I blame it on all of you, all this transparency and, you know, conflicts and all this other stuff. I'm going to just tell you, it is a problem to get quality people to come to work in the government.
There it was, John. That's what caught your ear, caught ours as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. I haven't seen much blowback on that. And what bothered me is when King John was making these pronouncements, why, you know, what is his particular problem with an ethical government? What is his problem with these regulations and laws were all promulgated by various state legislatures, I assume. I assume you don't want conflict of interest, unless, of course, maybe you're tied in with a brokerage firm or something. I guess that's okay. I'm a little bitter here.
Now,
or immature, I don't know which.
To put it in context, John, what the governor was saying, I think, he, in later remarks to reporters, said that he should have chosen his words more carefully. He said
he should do that more often.
Yeah,
now, he has quite a little habit of being arrogant and presumptuous when he's dealing with us. I'm a constituent.
Well, let me finish, John.
Okay.
What exactly he said? He said that he should have chosen his words more carefully. And he is all for transparency, and he agrees that there should be conflict of interest laws. And what he was frustrated by was that, you know, this openness has probably kept some people from applying for state jobs. Whether there should be, I mean, I'm all for transparency. I'm a member of the media. I want as much transparency as possible. But think about it: if you are an executive at a downtown Columbus firm or a bank, and you are thinking about looking for another job, and you don't want your boss to know about it, you know, you're not going to apply to the administration. I know that's the choice you make when you go to state government, and that's the way the rules are, but you can understand if he wants this person to be in his administration and they're not willing to put their name in the ring because they're afraid their boss is going to find out, it can be a little frustrating.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that's a little empty. If you are willing, you know, if the governor-elect or any executive of the executive branch approaches you to take on a position for the quote-unquote good of the state, to exercise your management ability, I'm certain that most firms would be more than happy to be able to say that Sammy Smith here has accepted a position with the state of Ohio in the Attorney General's office to represent, go against fraud, and he will be an appointed elector. He's not somebody that's taking a civil service exam. He's somebody that's serving the needs of the state. And I'm sure a lot of people, well, maybe I shouldn't say it that way, but I sense that there would be an opening for that person when he came back, because you do get a lot of FaceTime, you get a lot of connectivity. This allows you to present your opinions, if you will, within a closed format that will maybe benefit your industry when you come back to the civilian side of the ledger. So
all right.
I don't buy into that.
All right, John, we'll have to move on. Thanks for the call, 292-8513. We'll take a break. We have some calls waiting. Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann Fisher on All Sides, a pre-Christmas open forum when All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Time is running out for you to make your 2010 tax-deductible contribution to public radio. Your support helps ensure that WOSU will continue to serve Central Ohio listeners in 2011. It's simple to make your pledge by December 31st. Give online at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Your contribution has never been more important to the future of public radio. Thank you for supporting WOSU this year. And it's 29 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Cloudy skies today, a high of 34. Clouds tonight, a low of 22 degrees. Some sunshine expected for Thursday and a high near 30. And some clouds move in Thursday night, a low of 19 degrees. A little bit more sunshine for Friday and a high of 28. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann Fisher on All Sides this Wednesday before Christmas. Pre-Christmas open forum. The agenda is yours to set, more or less. We'll talk about all the things that are happening on Capitol Hill, at the State House, and at City Hall. As I mentioned at the top, perhaps the biggest news out of City Hall this week was the implementation of speed cameras in school zones, cameras that are located in vehicles, I believe SUVs, and they are designed to catch speeders who are traveling too quickly through areas where a lot of kids are congregating. So let's go to the phones. Michael, you have an opinion upon the speed cameras. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to just call. I heard somebody talking about that a little earlier and wanted to call and just offer a sort of word of caution, and that is that one of the things that I discovered, because I was caught in this particular speed zone, and I was caught doing what I thought was the speed limit on Livingston Avenue, which was 30 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew exactly what time I went through because I was on my cell phone, and I checked the time of the call. Because I swore, I really complained loudly that the light wasn't on when I entered the school zone. And the two officers that were standing there pulling people over, they had a whole line. And this is at the, I think it's the Afrocentric School on Livingston Avenue,
mm-hmm.
right kind of at the end of Mohawk. And they had so many people pulled over. They just had a line there. But what I discovered in the days after, because I went back and watched from the time that where my ticket, the time that was on my phone when I had made my call, and the police officer actually they come and turn that light on manually.
Mm-hmm.
So and for 3 days running, the man never showed up at the same time. He came late twice and was on time once, and yet the officers that are ticketing that stretch are there at like a quarter after two.
So were you caught by the camera or an officer running a radar gun?
I was caught by an officer running a radar
okay.
gun. But the point is that they're going to set those cameras to a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
But if the boxes for the lights that warn drivers that is a school zone and it's in the school zone time slot, if that isn't on when they enter, they're not going to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think hopefully they will coordinate the times. I think generally, I know the school zones I travel through, it's automatic, and sometimes there's a police officer there, and sometimes there is not. So I assume they're going to coordinate the times. But let's go to Kari. You're on the air. Go ahead, Kari. Hi, Kari. You're on All Sides with Ann Fisher, with Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. You want to talk about cameras as well? Kari, going once. Going twice? Thanks, Kari. Let's go to William. William, you want to talk about speed cameras. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm for the speed cameras. And but the reason is because, I read or heard somewhere that about 80% of our budget is fire and police,
mm-hmm.
in the city, that is. And this is a money-saving thing, and this is something I think we could get the police. I mean, there's nothing makes me more upset than just having a cop sitting on the side of the road pulling over speeders. I think that's a waste of our taxpayers' dollars. I think we should just put the speed cameras on every intersection all over town. Everybody knows what the speed limits are. We can all drive the speed limit. And eventually people will get accustomed to it. They won't be speeding anymore, and we won't have to pay all these police officers to be, kind of roaming around the town looking for speeders. So that's my take on it.
Even better, William, we can make some money with those cameras and generate more revenue, right?
Well, it doesn't make sense to me why we pay 80% of our city budget in just fire. I mean, obviously fire and police are important, but the other thing is to give them opportunities to be doing things more, what I would consider more beneficial, fighting crime and getting into communities and actually making a difference besides just pulling over speeders. So I think it's a money thing that everybody would win.
Okay. Thank you, William. 292-8513, I'm going to say a Friday open forum. It's a Wednesday open forum, the Wednesday before Christmas, 292-8513. Or you can email us. We'll read your emails on the air and get callers to react. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. 80% of the city budget, I think, is a bit high. It's definitely more than, I think, 70% of the city budget. But I think it's closer to 70 to 75% of the city budget goes to police and fire, but it could be as high as 80. Safe to say that a large majority of the city budget goes to the folks who protect us. Kari is back. Go ahead, Kari. You're on the air.
I apologize.
No problem.
I'm kind of on the clock. So, my point about both the red light cameras and the new speeder camera thing was that when I went to city council to listen to the arguments that were being presented, they talked about how awesome it was that the red light cameras had reduced all those crashes at the intersection where they had been placed. So they just think, well, we can just extrapolate, and then it'll be great because people are going to be paying more attention and all this stuff. But they didn't present any data that showed that anybody's behaviors were really changed in a general sense. That just because they have a traffic camera at 1% of the intersections in the city, well, what about the other 99% of the intersections in the city that don't have these red light cameras? The only thing that's making the people stop and obey the law is that they know that there's a red light camera there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the real benefit to it. And it goes right back to, well, it puts a lot of money in our account, in the city account. So to me, it's just like, well, if you want to fix behavior, fix what's wrong with the system. If it's that people run yellow lights because they know they've got lots of time to get through a yellow light, then make the yellow shorter, make the red for everybody longer, get everybody stopped, make it safe, then people will start to learn, oh, yeah, that light doesn't turn green for a couple of seconds. We'll wait it out and then proceed.
Well, we're going from 18 intersections with the red light cameras, I believe, to over 40, more than 40 intersections. So
right.
At this rate, you know, every intersection will have a red light camera, and that'll solve the problem.
40 out of 1,000, I guess that's something.
Yeah.
And there's 20,000 intersections in the city of Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
What about them? What about the four-way stop?
Yeah.
Do they not think that it's important that we don't crash there also?
I think it's just...
I'm on Hard Road, the only road that's important.
All right. Thanks for the call, Kari. 292-8513. Speed cameras generating a lot of discussion this morning. We can also talk about the incoming John Kasich administration, the outgoing Ted Strickland administration as well. 292-8513. Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
On the issue of the cameras and automatic ticketing and such, I think there's two operative words here, which are slippery slope and wretched excess. For probably over the last 4 or 5 years, myself and my sister, who both have been community activists and involved in some of the political races and things, have attended some of the Columbus Police Department meetings on these cameras and some of the city council meetings and raised some serious objections. And generally, they were very poorly attended. People didn't have much concern as to what was going to be falling down on them.
Mm.
And I think generally what's happened is, in terms of the city of Columbus, Councilman Ginther has been in charge of the subcommittee responsible for these cameras. And I think he's a very capable administrator, very thoughtful guy. And what he's done is he's tried to fine-tune and make the best situation out of a bad idea. So it would be sort of like a manure sandwich. You can put 100 ingredients on it, and you can make it look beautiful, but it's still not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess on the one of the problems that we raised with the issue of the cameras, whether they're red light or speeding or license plates, and it's gradually expanding. First it was just for red lights, and then it was right turn zone reds, and then it was for speeding, and now it's for keeping track of auto license plates so we know who's driving around, sort of the slippery slope ever expanding. That it's right now it's being done for the red lights. It's being done through a Red Flux company located in Scottsdale, Arizona. Originally, the city didn't do a good job before Ginther got involved, and about two-thirds of the revenues raised from the cameras were being outsourced, taken out of our community, and sent off to Arizona.
Yeah. Mark, We're going to move on. Thanks for the call. Yeah, Redflex is the vendor. They have gotten a good cut of the revenue. I think that the city gets a better deal with the new cameras, and I'm not sure what the speed camera cut is, but the company does get some. And what is kind of surprising is the company gets a say in which intersections these red light cameras will be located. My guess is that they're not going to be located at intersections that don't have a whole lot of cars, because there won't be a whole lot of tickets given out, even if that intersection perhaps is pretty dangerous. But that's what we have. And, you know, most people, I think, seem to want the cameras, especially, you know, the observation cameras, or the cameras designed to catch, you know, unusual or illegal activity in high crime neighborhoods. Residents tend to want them. They think it's a good deterrent for crime in those areas. Let's go to Ann. Ann, you're on the air.
Hi. I agree with the previous caller. I'm against cameras. I lived in San Antonio, and they wanted to place cameras there, and it just didn't work, and they had taken them down because there is a glitch in the timing. So they and also the funds were going to Arizona. It was not preferable for the city. And if we're going to do it in a city, how about the suburbs too?
Well, it could be coming. I mean, I think it's up to individual suburban cities, city council, and if they want to install these cameras, I'm sure they're looking at it, and they see $2 million coming in from, what, 8 or 10 intersections or whatever it was, 18 intersections, and they say that's money we could have too. So I'm sure they're looking at it.
Well, you're not going to get the money. It goes to Arizona.
No, the city gets some of it. Redflex, the camera vendor, does get some, and the city gets some. Whether the city gets enough is open to debate, but the city does get some revenue from it. So 292-8513, a lot of questions about the cameras. Let's go to a different topic, and I hit the red button. I do it all the time when I fill in for Ann. I hit the red button, and I knocked Susan off the air, even though she had been holding for 10 minutes. So, Susan, I apologize. I went to hit the on button, and I hit the red button. It's so tempting. Please call back. Susan wanted to talk about the economy, and I feel terrible. Susan, you call back, and I'll get you on the air right away. Five. Let's go to line five. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead, Mike.
I'd like to talk about the economy. I was going so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was thinking, like, how those speed cameras that you were talking about, there's like too many of them going from different state to state, and like how much money does the government spend for all those? That can make the economy go even bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to see, Mike. The speed cameras, I think, are a way for the city, and with declining revenues, to make some additional money. You know, they're looking for all kinds of ways to make money. The city's helped by the fact that they raised income tax about a year and a half ago. You're going to see you'll see fees and fines at the state level increasing, because Governor Kasich has said he's not going to raise taxes. In fact, he's going to implement the last phase of the income tax cut, which Governor Strickland delayed by a year. So your taxes are actually going to go down. That means less revenue from the state. If the number of employed people remains the same, that's less revenue for the state in the next 2 years. So look for fees and look for fines and things like that to increase as the state tries to avoid taxes but also generate additional revenue. Hal, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Interesting topic. Got a lot of things I'd like to talk about, but you're talking right now about the traffic cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at a time when we had an officer on the police department who designed the traffic flow in this city so that you could get from, Broughton High to Morse Road in 5 minutes. And that was the mentality. Well, now, after they have run everybody out of downtown with their parking policies, they want to run everybody out of the city with their traffic camera policies. And I think that's going to be the bottom line, is that they're going to get the same result with the traffic cameras that they got with the parking downtown.
Do you think someone is not going to come, for instance, to a Blue Jackets hockey game in downtown Columbus because there's a red light camera right near the arena?
Well, no, but the other parking problems down there does present mm-hmm. that issue. It's either the elevated costs of the tickets and the parking that goes with it, or And you have to admit that's not for the average working person. That's more for the suburban people who are in the upper income levels than it is for the residents of the central city.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is with Ohio State football, they inundate our neighborhoods and they jam up our streets with traffic, and they overpark on these weekend deals during football season in the university district, and drive everybody in the university district crazy with their traffic directions. And they're going to do the same thing with these red light cameras. They're going to make everybody crazy, and people are just going to start saying, you know what, I'm done with this, yeah, just like they did with parking downtown. And they can't get people to come downtown now just simply because nobody wants to deal with the hassle.
Okay. Thank you, Hal. Appreciate the call. 292-8513 if you'd like to join in our conversation. 292-8513. We're having an open forum where we are discussing things that have happened over the past couple of weeks. Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed today. President Obama signed it into law, the repeal of the ban on gays openly serving in the military. Also, the START Treaty, the Nuclear Reduction Treaty, is set to be ratified by the Senate. The Senate apparently has the two-thirds of the vote needed to ratify that treaty after breaking the filibuster yesterday. Our taxes will remain low. For some of us, they'll even go down a bit more in this sluggish economy and as we face record deficits. 292-8513. We welcome you to join the conversation as All Sides with me, Mike Thompson, today continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
The next Fresh Air, our TV critic David Bianculli talks about his list of the best and worst TV programs of the year. Join us for a look back at the year in television on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes or so. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Listen to WOSU Public Media's new radio service, Classical 101, for classical music 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. Start your day with Boyce Lancaster beginning at 6 a.m. Classical 101 will also bring you the Amadeus Deli, Performance Today, Symphony at 7, and much more. Find the best in classical music all day, every day. Only on Classical 101. For complete program listings, visit wosu.org/classical101.
Support for WOSU comes from Thrifty Airport Valet Parking, a valet service for business and leisure travelers that takes you in your car to curbside check-in at Port Columbus, 614-237-5800 or thriftycolumbus.com.
Cloudy skies today, a high of 34 degrees. Clouds tonight, a low of 22. And we could see some sunshine on Thursday, a high near 30. Clouds Thursday night and a low of 19. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann. We're having an open forum this Wednesday before Christmas, our last open forum of 2010. Get your thoughts on a lot of issues. Speed cameras dominating the discussion this morning. You know, there are a few topics in this town that people love to talk about. Cameras is one. Passenger rail is another. Social media is another. But let's go to Patrice, who has been patiently waiting. Go ahead, Patrice. You want to talk about the speed cameras? Patrice, are you there? Nope. Apparently she gave up on us. Walt, you're on the air. Go ahead, Walt.
Hello.
Yes.
The point I was trying to make is that if you look at the cameras as a voluntary tax, then if you don't want to pay the tax, don't speed, just obey the law. It's just that simple.
So you think it's a fair, even catching speeders by cameras, you don't have a problem with that?
Absolutely. There's no difference between catching the speeders on camera, which if you look at the facts, are more lenient than what a police officer would be as far as how much they can exceed the speed limit. And if you just obey the speed limits as they're posted, even with that large margin, then if you get caught, then just think it's you're paying a voluntary tax to the city and your community.
How are the cameras more lenient?
Pardon me?
How are the cameras more lenient than an actual police officer there watching?
It's up to the city council that puts the cameras in that they can decide how much how much over the speed limit they can go before the lights are triggered,
mm-hmm.
before the camera's triggered.
All right. Thanks for the call, Walt. Appreciate it. 292-8513, 292-8513. There are other things going on besides the cameras, but that's what people want to talk about today. You know, the passenger rail folks say they're not giving up, even though John Kasich has said he is not going to restore passenger rail service between Cincinnati, Columbus, and Cleveland. And the federal government has decided to give Ohio's $400 million to other states. The passenger rail folks are keeping up the fight. They're keeping their web presence and trying to keep the pressure on, hoping that the governor-elect changes his mind and hoping that other money comes from Washington to restore the rail service. Governor Ted Strickland, in his farewell interviews, has been saying, and he said last week at the Columbus Metropolitan Club, that that was the saddest, one of the saddest moments of his administration is when the federal government took the money away, knowing that the incoming governor was not going to pursue the passenger rail service. So weigh in on passenger rail as well, 292-8513. Jama, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I just wanted to, you know, talk about the cameras. I just got back from a country called United Arab Emirates,
mm-hmm.
and the city's called Dubai.
Yes.
And I've seen a lot of these cameras that's so new to us, you know, over there. It's, like, so strict. But honestly, I really don't oppose it. It's a good idea to keep speeders off the road and keeping kids safe. And not just as well as kids, but as well as pedestrians walking on the road. But it's a really good idea, and it really helps the city make a lot of money. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about.
So when you were in the United Arab Emirates, were the cameras designed to watch motorists at red lights, at speeders?
It's not just speeders, but they watch everybody. Like, they would have them on the side of the highway, on the left-hand side or on the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
And even on residential area, because a lot of people speed out there. Mm-hmm. So
they weren't watching what you had for lunch. They were actually watching for speeders and that kind of thing.
Yes, speeders. You know, it's just radars that's just put on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
You don't notice them, but they give you signs up ahead, like mm-hmm. a mile ahead. Hey, if you don't speed, you know, if you don't be careful, you're going to get a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of warning signs, like half a mile away or even a mile away, to just give you a heads up. Look, stop speeding. There are actual cameras out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, speeding is an issue. I lived on a very busy residential street, and it was a constant battle trying to get cars to slow down. We asked the city for speed bumps, but there was, frankly, wasn't enough money, and they couldn't do it. So, you know, maybe cameras are the solution to get folks to slow down, because it certainly is a problem, especially in residential areas and in places where there are a lot of pedestrians, a lot of kids playing ball and that kind of thing. So maybe cameras is the solution, but the fear is Big Brother is becoming more and more present in our society. Trevor wants to change the topic. Go ahead, Trevor.
Yes, greetings. Good morning, and I hope you'll have a blessed new year. And
same to you. Same to you.
Yes, man. Yeah. What I'm talking about, I want to ask you one question. What did Rod, the outgoing governor, what did he do wrong?
What he did wrong, my guess, is he got elected in 2006, and the economy went to pot in 2008. It was timing. I think it was pure and simple timing that he was caught by the recession. Now, you could argue that some of his policies didn't help, but I think that any governor who lost or saw the disappearance of 400,000 jobs while he or she was governor would have been caught in a similar situation. Democrat,
okay.
Republican, Martian, independent, whatever.
Well, I hear you, sir. But I'm saying if Americans take a little time to know what's going on, like with the economy and mm-hmm. the taxes, remember way back in the Great Depression?
Mm-hmm.
President raised taxes, and by the course of 6 months, things would start coming back already to life. Of course, the war came on, but he raised taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And Americans forget that. Now, about the rail now, Strickland, you know, wanted the rail, the free sea thing, like how you'll call it,
mm-hmm.
Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati. You know, where the rail would be going through, all these farmers, all those like Republican people that voted against him, they would be the ones benefiting, because the rails wouldn't be going through the cities. It would be going through the countryside.
Mm-hmm. But the trains weren't going to stop in the countryside. They were going to stop in the cities only.
Right. I'm saying, but parts of it would have to be going through the rural areas.
Yeah, but it would go by pretty fast. Or, you know, at least, what it, you know, that the point was to have few stops to get people between these cities pretty quickly.
Okay.
So there would be some stops, but I don't think you would stop at every – it wouldn't stop at Mansfield,
great.
For instance.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to – yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Taxes. I think we should raise the taxes because that's how we get things going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now that governor would come in and he wouldn't raise taxes. How will we get that money to do what we have to do in the city?
Well, we're going to find out. Trevor, we're going to find out. It'll be an interesting few months as Governor-elect Kasich prepares his budget, and he says he's going to stick to his no new taxes pledge, and we'll see how that works out. Dee, you're on the air. Go ahead, Dee.
Hi, I'm in Cincinnati actually watching the TV.
But, oh, cool. Hey, Dee.
Hi. yeah, I don't understand why sometimes these politicians do things, I think, more for politics. For example, getting rid of the passenger rail system as an option. I don't know. What's the reason? First of all, do you know the reason why they're claiming that's not a good thing to do?
Well, here in a nutshell, I mean, what was going to happen was the federal government was going to give Ohio $400 million, roughly, to establish 3C rail between Cincinnati through Dayton, through Columbus, up to Cleveland. And the goal is eventually that it would be a high-speed rail line. Now, that's very expensive, probably close to $1 billion to do that. But the goal was to get passenger rail reestablished up this corridor in the preparation for high-speed rail down the road. The criticism was that $400 million was only the startup cost, and it was going to cost the state at least $17 million a year to subsidize the passenger rail service. And then the rail would be about the same amount of time, maybe even a little bit slower, than it would take you to drive from Cincinnati to Cleveland. The other argument against the rail was once you got to one of these cities, there was no infrastructure to get used to elsewhere. So you got to downtown Cleveland or downtown Columbus, you had to rent a car, you had to take a cab, and that was going to be more expensive. So too slow, too expensive, and the infrastructure within the city is not there to support it. Now, proponents say it would have meant, you know, it's the first step towards this high-speed rail. You can't have high-speed rail without restoring the passenger rail service. And it would have led to development around rail stations, which would have meant jobs. It would have meant companies locating in Ohio to build rail cars, and that would have meant jobs. So those were the arguments, and changing government, Governor Kasich has said we're going to not spend that money and give the money back to the feds.
I see that it could have benefited. I believe, yes, it could have added more jobs. And mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who travel back and forth from this area in Cincinnati to Cleveland who would have used the rail system. So it just seems like a lot of times these governments, they get rid of things for political reasons. For example, even Reagan, when he took down the solar panels when Jimmy Carter had installed, it just seems all we could have been ahead of the game with solar and energy and mm-hmm. all that. But I hope that they're able to get that going again. And light rail, we need the light rails within the cities, too. They're trying to get rid of that as also. And I don't understand why they get rid of good things that can help the communities and the state for just political sake. But anyway, that's
okay.
My two cents.
Thank you, Dee.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching in Cincinnati. For those of you who aren't sure what Dee was talking about, we are on Ohio government television. On digital cable systems around the state. All Sides with Ann Fisher is carried every day between 10 and noon around the state. So thanks to Ohio Government Television. And you can watch us online. If you go to WOSU.org, you can actually watch a radio show being produced as you listen to it if you go to WOSU.org/AllSides. So that we're starting to get some calls from other parts of the state, which is good to hear. And Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I think it's amazing that in this lame duck session we've had so many major pieces of legislation passed. And I have an overall suggestion for a program. I'm a retired I was in natural resource policy analysis. I guess you could say it's sort of a science. But to what extent is political science and social science of economics really sciences? I think we can debate that.
Mm-hmm.
If we really had some scientific information about that, would we be debating about whether reducing the taxes on or not increasing the taxes on the really wealthy would or would not filter down? I think when we use the word science, we're always thinking of the physical, biological, but the social and behavioral sciences claim to be very scientific, but sometimes I am led to wonder. I had my classes to discuss these things, but so I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it's very hard because, what we try to do is I think public radio does a pretty good job at this, is we try to get experts like economists on the air to say, okay, do tax cuts work to stimulate the economy? If you give tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans, for example, do they take that money and put it back into the economy? Do they invest in companies that create jobs? Or do they sit on the money? Do they put it in their bank account? Or do they invest in things that don't create jobs? Do they send it off to offshore bank accounts? I mean, so we try to get the experts on to try to get to the bottom of that, but it's very difficult to try to get to the bottom of these things.
And I guess one of my points is these experts aren't too expert because, number one, our data aren't all that good, and number two, their so-called science isn't all that good either. And a lot of it is ideology, the bottom line, mm-hmm. what they assume to be the way things work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be a good, not only on Science Friday, what is a social science and behavioral science and how accurate can they predict the future? If we don't predict the future and just explain the past, I mean, yeah, we can all do that.
Yeah.
But thanks for taking my call on this, and it's something to think about.
Thanks. Great suggestion, Bob. Thanks very much.
Yeah, 292-8513,
292-8513. Just a couple of minutes left. We have lines open if you would like to jump in, talk about passenger rail going by the boards here in the city of Columbus. Talk about the cameras being installed. We've got a lot of calls on the speed cameras and the red light cameras that the city of Columbus is installing to try to catch red light runners and also catch speeders in school zones. The incoming John Kasich administration, they're making their appointments to the cabinet and starting to give us some hints about how they will govern over the next 4 years. It should be an interesting time. Should make for much better copy for reporters like me. Over the next couple of years, Ted Strickland, very low-key guy, kind of, more folksy. John Kasich tends to shoot from the hip, as he did last week, and that gives us plenty to react to. So we'll see if that continues as he prepares to take office. Governor Strickland is doing his farewell interviews this week. We did ours with him on Monday, which will appear Friday night on Columbus on the Record, 8:30 on WOSU-TV. A good discussion. He basically is saying that he has left the state of Ohio with a foundation that is stronger now than it was when he took office in 2006. And he points to 8 successive months of job growth, although modest job growth nonetheless. He also points to his education reform package, which critics say is unfunded, but the governor points out it goes beyond money and that there are some teacher reforms in there, greater accountability for teachers, also the teacher internship program where they help young teachers gain the experience they need to teach kids in the classroom. He also points to improvements in the transportation and logistics industry in Ohio, a greater number of students attending 2- and 4-year colleges around the state. He says that the state is really poised to grow after the economy crawls out of this recession we are in now. So remains to be seen if we are in a stronger position, and it remains to be seen if Governor Strickland will get the credit for if, in fact, he has left Ohio with a stronger foundation than when he came into office. We asked him if he had any regrets about how he ran his campaign. He took some criticism for going negative against John Kasich pretty early. He of course, when a politician runs a negative ad, they say it's not negative. He's just presenting the facts. And he said he wouldn't do anything differently. He thought that John Kasich's Wall Street ties was a legitimate issue in the campaign, and the people of Ohio needed to be fully informed about that. And that's why he went after John Kasich hard on that issue. 292-8513. It's funny, with just 5 minutes left, all the lines are full. So let's try to get to as many calls as we can. Go ahead, Marlene, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I just wanted to mention the loss of congressional seats in Ohio, and it really pains me personally. I have literally traveled across the country from coast to coast this decade looking for work in different areas, and I made it back to Ohio to help repopulate Ohio, you know, forget about the brain drain. I'm back, and somehow we actually had an increase in population, but managed to lose two congressional seats.
It's because you didn't,
and therefore lose congressional power.
It's because you didn't bring more of your friends with you, Marlene.
I tried, but I tell you, the snow in Ohio is a really tough sell to my friends in Southern California.
And there lies the problem. The cities in the South grew faster than Ohio. Ohio didn't lose people, as you said. I mean, Northeast Ohio has seen some declines, but other parts of the state have seen increases in population. But Ohio did not grow as fast as Texas and Florida. So I think sunshine has a lot to do with it. Thanks for the call, Marlene. Let's go to Rick. Rick, you're on the air. Hi, Rick.
Yes. Well, I just had a comment that there's we should ignore the history of our current situation in regard to the recession. During the 30s, there were programs built to make work 3C and WPA.
Mm-hmm.
These things put people to work on a temporary basis and were successful. During the 80s, Japan went through a recession, and in our recession and our depression and their recession, the common denominator seems to be that people revolted against the spending that it took to bring them out of this problem. And, you know, nobody likes deficits, although during the Clinton administration, the deficits were erased. And if it could be done once, I think we could do it again, and let us participate in programs with a proven record of success during our depression and Japan's recession during the 80s.
Okay. Rick, we're going to move on, but thanks for the call. 292-8513. Actually, we probably won't get to too many more calls, so let's get to as many as we can. And who's been waiting longer? Tim, you're on the air. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, in regard to high-speed rail, if you wanted to find out why Casey was so adamantly opposed to it, look at the big money interests who are opposed to it, for example, big oil, and how much the big money interest contributed to toward Kasich's campaign.
So you
I
think,
go back with this. Go ahead.
You think it's the highway lobby, the vehicle?
Big oil, for starters. I go back when this issue was debated by fellows from the oil industry against Representative Art Wilkowski from the Toledo area, whose cute nickname was Choo-Choo Wilkowski, who was a proponent of it. And we were at three or four debates, and it was obvious to see who was opposed to it. And it was all big moneyed interest led by big oil.
All right, Tim.
And then if you, I mean, you're associated with the university, if you wanted to see how much those which interests are opposed to it financially, and B, how much they contributed to Casey's campaign, that would give you good insight.
All right, we'll take it up on that. Thank you very much. Marie, I'm going to give you, you got 30 seconds. You can be our last word. Go ahead, Marie, you're on the air.
Well, let's consider the trains for older people who shouldn't be driving. They can get to visit their grandchildren. Young children that I spoke to on a train once said, oh, this is so much better than in a car. We don't have to be strapped down. How much easier is it to clear snow from two rails as opposed to cars where we all get stuck and have accidents and so on and so forth? Let's think of something besides speed.
Thanks, Marie. We're at the end of the show. We appreciate the call. Thanks very much to everyone who called in. And let me just say, for all of us at WOSU, for all of us at All Sides with Ann Fisher, for Ann herself, we want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a very happy holiday season, whichever holiday you celebrate. Our best wishes for you this holiday season and for the new year. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org.